Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio from Boise, Idaho. This is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. Well, today's episode is brought to you by the financial support of our listeners, and our listener support campaign continues. So I do encourage you to support the show at support.greatdetectives.net. During this special series of programs running through the first part of September, we will be focusing on listener support. And in addition to the normal thank you gift of access to our premium site, which we do with all donations of $7 or more, with all donations of $20 or more, I'll send a digital copy of my ebook, All I Needed to Know, I Learned from Columbo. In addition to that, I will send you one additional gift based on a donation size. At the $20 level, one thing we have available are some great radio dramas from the Colonial Radio Theater. And a consistent favorite with our listeners through the years has been their dramatizations of the early Perry Mason stories. They've done the first five Perry Mason novels and adapted them into 90-minute stories. They're wonderfully done. I enjoyed each one of them. And you can have your pick, starting with The Velvet Claws. That's the first one, for any donation of $20. And at the $50 and $100 level, we also have gift certificates to radioarchives.com. It's just a great site. With so much there in terms of old-time radio, they have episodes of Let George Do It that we weren't able to play on this program that were syndicated in Canada on sets 1, 2, and 4 of their Let George Do It sets. Plus, they have just a lot of great radio dramas in high-fidelity audio. It's really, you know, a luxury when you listen to it, because I can listen to low-to-mid-quality radio programs all the time. But it's something special when I listen to their sets. They do a good job of just making it sound like you're in the room with the actors. In addition, they've got a whole lot of other things they've added. Pulp Fiction ebooks and audiobooks of old Pulp Fiction titles like Doc Savage. And so those gift certificates to radioarchives.com is available at the $50 and $100 levels. But now let's get into today's episode of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, The Fathom Five Matter.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
Ralph Steedler, Johnny. Delta Liability.
Oh, hiya, Ralph. What's on your mind?
Poetry, you Philistine.
Hmm?
The bard's immortal words.
Which words?
Full fathom five thy father lies. Of his bones are corals made. And those...
Those are pearls that were his eyes.
Yeah.
What's the case, Ralph? Robbery? A pearl necklace?
Life insurance. $75,000 worth of bones down in the bottom of the deep blue sea, or so they say.
So who say?
The insured's wife, the insured's best friend. Oh, they're quite positive about it.
But you're not, is that it?
Johnny, if I'm going to be stuck for 75 G's, at least I ought to get the straight dope, shouldn't I?
All right, I'll get it for you. Give me the who and where.
It happened in Miami Beach. Check with the DA's office there. The insured was a man named William Markey.
And the beneficiary?
His wife, poor wretch.
Oh, you're biased, Ralph.
Sure, I'm paying alimony. So look it over, Johnny, and keep in touch.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. From Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Home Office, Delta Liability, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Fathom 5 matter. Item 1, $143.40. Transportation, tips, and incidentals, Hartford to Miami. Purpose of assignment, aside from a chance to get a look at the sun, to check into the death of one William Markey, or to find out if there was a death, and how it happened, and where was the body, and if not, why not, and if so, how. Or rather, to determine... Well, anyway, the deputy investigator from the DA's office, a man named Barney Wilson, was at least as confused as I was, and he'd had a 2-day head start.
Now, we're going on the assumption, of course, that the man is dead. But legally, you understand, the fact hasn't yet been established.
Meaning exactly what, Mr. Wilson?
Well, it's pretty strong evidence, but no corpus delicti. Not so far, anyway.
Maybe you'd better start at the beginning.
And that would be where, Mr. Donner? How much do you know about the case?
Well, very little.
Mm-hmm.
The dead man, if he is dead, was named William Markey. He was 46 years old,
yeah.
Owner of a consulting engineering firm in New York.
Mm-hmm.
He'd been married to his present wife for 3 years. Her age is 30, mm-hmm. And she's the beneficiary of his insurance.
And, I might add, a charming and lovely young woman.
They've been down here for about a month. And 3 days ago, Markey was killed, or allegedly killed, in an accident.
That's right.
Drowned, as I understand it, when a fishing launch sank a mile or two offshore. And then... Well, you can take it from there, Mr. Wilson.
Now, your responsibility in the case is primarily to the insurance company. Is that right, Mr. Donner?
Entirely, not primarily. Why, what do you mean?
And it would be to the company's advantage if Markey's death were not legally established, huh?
They wouldn't have to pay the claim, if that's what you mean.
Then it's reasonable to suppose, since the whole case is pretty vague at present, that your efforts will be devoted to creating doubts as to whether Markey is really dead.
Mr. Wilson, I think it's reasonable to suppose that I can't very well answer your questions without knowing exactly what has happened.
Uh-huh. Well, all right, then. Briefly, this is it. Apparently, Markey came down here to bid on a construction job, a manufacturing plant. We didn't get the job. But he stayed on, he and his wife, and the young fellow that was with him.
What young fellow?
Name of Danny Haynes. He worked for Markey, a draftsman or engineer. Evidently a personal friend of the Markeys.
Oh.
The three of them took a house down the beach south and spent all their time together, nightclubbing, one thing and another.
I see.
Anyhow, well, 3 days ago, Markey and young Haynes went out fishing together, hired a charter boat, a small cabin cruiser named the Fathom 5, and headed south along the coast, working the offshore banks.
Whose idea was the trip?
Markey's, according to young Haynes. In fact, all the rest of the story is according to Haynes. Nobody else saw what happened.
And what did happen?
Well, Haynes says they anchored off the reef and both of them fished from the dinghy for a while. Then Markey decided he'd go back to the cruiser and fix some breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
Haynes put him aboard and took the dinghy out alone. He says he fished along the reef for about 30 minutes before he looked back and saw the cruiser was afire. It was nearly a mile away, according to his story, and by the time he got back, the boat was a pillar of flame.
He didn't see any sign of Markey?
No, he says not. He couldn't get aboard because of the flames, and a few minutes later, the cruiser sank.
Mm-hmm. No one else saw it? There were no other boats around?
No, it was early morning, and there weren't many others out. It had rained during the night, and there was a fairly heavy fog. They're only a mile and a half or so offshore, so Haynes rowed in with the dinghy and reported it.
Mm-hmm. Tell me, what was the depth of the ocean where the cruiser sank?
Oh, it was only about 50 feet. I've got a salvage company working now to raise it.
Get a diver down?
Yes, but he didn't find out much. He couldn't get inside the hold.
That's about the size of it, huh?
Mm-hmm, it is. Until they get that cruiser raised so we can take a look at it. And, of course, it may not tell us a thing.
Yeah. What about the currents along the reef where that boat went down?
Oh, they're pretty bad. Strong and erratic. A body could be carried through the reefs and on out to sea and never be found.
Well, I was thinking more of the possibility of a good swimmer getting into shore. You said they were anchored only a mile and a half out.
Yes, well, it's possible, but not very probable. He'd have been seen by Haynes or somebody else.
There was a heavy fog, wasn't there?
Mm-hmm, fairly heavy.
And, of course, Haynes could be lying. Maybe he did see him.
I said it was possible. But that's not the line I'm planning to take, Mr. Dollar.
So I get it.
They'll bring that hull to the surface sometime tomorrow. Maybe we'll have some evidence then. Or maybe Markey's body will turn up in the next 48 hours.
And if not?
Then, Mr. Dollar, I will petition the probate court to declare him legally dead.
I suppose you've got some reason for all this, Rush.
Yes. I want the fact of death established in order to file a murder charge.
Danny Haynes?
Who else? It's the old, old story, isn't it? Two men go out and only one comes back. Unwitnessed accident. Nothing new about it.
No, no. And it's never been an easy one to prove.
Well, it'll be a lot tougher a year from now if you people put up a fight and force the decision up to the Superior Court.
Suppose Haynes himself fights it.
I wish he'd try. Be the next thing to an admission of guilt.
Oh, Mrs. Markey. She has legal status in the case.
She could do it, but she won't.
Yeah, you're probably right. She wouldn't be likely to throw away $75,000. Well, I can't tell you what we'll do yet, Mr. Wilson. I'll have to look around first, talk to the people involved, get my feet on the ground.
Mm-hmm, fine. Well, you just do that. Here, I'll give you the addresses.
Oh, good.
Mrs. Markey is still at the beach house. Young Haynes has moved into a hotel near there.
All right, thanks. Say, how did the three of them get along during the month they've been here?
Like peas in a pod, from all appearances. Of course, what was going on behind the scenes might have been another story.
It usually is.
I think that's where we'll find the motive. Not that Mrs. Markey encouraged Haynes at all. She's a fine woman.
I know, and she's beautiful. And this is the South.
How's that?
So long, Mr. Wilson. I'll keep in touch. Expense account item 2, $3.35. Telegram to Hartford requesting an investigation of the Markey firm's financial status both currently and over the past 3 years. And a similar check of Markey's personal financial status. Item 3, $4.10. Taxi to the Pompano Beach Hotel to talk with the DA's prime suspect, Danny Haynes.
Look, Mr. Dollar, I've been over the whole thing with the police a half a dozen times.
I'd still like to ask you a few questions, if you don't mind.
They've got the whole story, all I know about it. They had a stenographer to take it down. Why don't you go to them with your questions?
Maybe I got different questions.
I told them everything I know about it.
Look, Danny, you don't have to talk to me, but if you're smart, you will.
Why so?
Because the police already have their minds made up. Or at least Barney Wilson has.
Sure. He's out to prove I killed Mr. Markey.
Well, look, my mind isn't made up yet, so you can't lose anything by talking to me. Unless, of course, you did kill him.
It happened exactly the way I told them. All right, what do you want to know?
How long did you work for Markey?
2 years.
You get along with him all right?
Sure. It was a good job. No complaints.
You got to be pretty close personal friends, I understand.
Well, I used to go to their apartment in New York once or twice a week for dinner, drinks.
And then the three of you came down here together on a vacation.
It wasn't a vacation. Mr. Markey came down to bid on a job.
Did he need you along for that?
Well, he thought there might be some sketches or plans to draw up.
And were there?
Well, no. As it turned out, they weren't necessary.
Funny, Markey wouldn't know that ahead of time, being an engineer.
Well, actually, it was sort of Edna's suggestion of Mrs. Markey, I mean.
I see. Yeah, now I see.
Now, look, don't get the idea there's been anything between us. She's been swell to me. She's just wonderful, that's all.
All right, all right. So the three of you came down on business, and within a few days, the job contract was awarded to another firm, but you still stayed on for 3 more weeks.
That was Markey's idea. I don't know why, exactly. I know he'd counted a lot on getting that job. But I was getting a free vacation. Why should I argue?
So all of you just relaxed and lived it up, huh?
Yeah, that's about it.
Mr. Markey, too? No apparent worries on his mind?
Well, he was moody sometimes. Went off by himself. But that wasn't too unusual. He was like that quite a lot.
He and his wife seem to be getting along, all right?
Sure. As far as I noticed, why?
Well, let's talk about that accident for a minute, Danny. Whose idea was it to go on the fishing trip?
Mr. Markey's. He woke me up at 5 in the morning, said he'd already phoned and hired the boat.
The Phantom 5?
Yeah, the same one we'd had a couple of times before. Mm-hmm. Well, I wasn't much for it. It was misting out with a heavy fog, but he was real hot on the idea, and I couldn't very well argue he was the boss.
Was Mrs. Markey up when you left?
No, but she knew we were going. She'd packed a lunch. I guess they'd talked about it the night before.
All right, you took the boat out then and followed the reef south, and what happened?
Well, we anchored as close as we could get to the reef and went out in the dinghy for about an hour. No luck at all. Then Mr. Markey decided he'd go back on board and fix something to eat.
Mm-hmm.
I let him off and then rowed back along the reef. I figured as long as I'd had to come, I might as well try for a strike or two at least. And a while after that, I looked back and saw the cruiser was on fire.
Was it still foggy then?
Yeah, about the same. I could just see the glow. I couldn't even be sure what it was until I got close. I tried to get on board, but the flames were too high. I kept yelling, but there was nobody around.
And you didn't see or hear any sign of Markey?
No, I guess he was already dead. Then, not more than 5 minutes later, the cruiser sank.
Yeah. Danny, do you have any theory as to what caused the fire?
Well, there was a hot plate on board. A gasoline pressure rig. It was an old one in pretty bad shape. We talked about it before. I think it may have leaked into the bulkheads in the bilge. And when Mr. Markey went to light it to fix breakfast, the whole boat just went up in flames.
I see. Tell me something, Danny. Do you think Markey could have committed suicide?
Suicide? Why? For what reason?
Oh, maybe losing that contract. You said it was pretty important to him. Or maybe he thought he was losing his wife.
What do you mean?
Well, maybe he misinterpreted your friendship with her, Danny.
You're crazy.
You're in love with her, aren't you?
That's my business. I told you there was nothing between us.
All right. But didn't Markey know that? Look, you're the same age she is, and he was 15 years older. A man like that might get to wondering...
Knock it off, Dollar. Nobody's private life is going to be dragged into this.
You better stop and think, Danny, while you've still got time. A defendant in a murder trial doesn't have any private life. Johnny Dollar.
Barney Wilson, Mr. Dollar, special deputy with the DA's office. I understand you talked to Danny Haynes.
You've got a good grapevine, Mr. Wilson.
Oh, tolerable. Well, what do you think?
Well, I'll go about 6-5. He hasn't murdered anybody.
Well, that's close to even money. So you're not too sure, huh?
No, I'm not too sure. But then I'm not even sure yet that Markey is dead, remember?
Well, maybe we can settle that question this evening.
What do you mean?
The salvage boys have finally got grapple lines on that boat. They figure to bring it up to the surface around 8 o'clock. I'm going out in one of the harbor launches. You'd like to come along?
My company's got a 75 grand stake in this. Sure, I'd like to come along.
All right. You meet me at Harbor Police Headquarters at 7:30.
I'll be there.
Good. I'll introduce you to the late William Markey.
Somehow, I sort of doubt that, Mr. Wilson. From Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Home Office, Delta Liability, Hartford, Connecticut. Assignment, the Phantom Five matter. Location, Miami, Florida. Expense account continued. Item 6, $3.85. Taxi fare to the Markey Beach House, occupied for the past 3 days now by his wife since William Markey's accidental death. According to all reports, a very beautiful woman. The reports were correct.
Won't you come in, Mr. Dollar?
Thank you.
Come this way. I've been practically living in here in the study since... I just haven't had the heart to even look at the rest of the house.
Yes, I imagine it's been quite a shock for you, Mrs. Markey.
Yes, terrible. No one knows. Sit down, Mr. Dollar.
Thank you.
I really don't know very much about these matters. If there are papers to sign, maybe I should have a lawyer or something.
No, that won't be necessary. For the present, there's nothing to sign.
But aren't you with the insurance company?
I'm working for them at the moment as a special investigator.
Oh.
I'm to supply them with a full report of your husband's accident. They have to have that before they can do anything about paying off the policy.
Well, couldn't the police give you all that? And there's a Mr. Wilson, I think his name is, who's with the district
attorney's office. I've talked to Mr. Wilson. He's cooperating in every way possible. But some of the details I have to get from you.
Have you talked with Danny Haynes?
Yes.
Well, didn't he tell you what happened?
He gave me a statement, yes. But only covering the details he actually knew about.
Well, I'm sure there's nothing I can add, Mr. Dollar. I wasn't even there, as you know, of course.
I know, Mrs. Markey. I'll get all of those details elsewhere.
But then I don't see why you've
come
out here...
Well, I'd like to know a few things about your husband. Things you'd know better than anybody else. His actions and behavior during the last few weeks. His mental attitude.
I see. You think maybe he committed suicide, is that it?
I don't think anything. I'm just trying to find out.
But that's what you're driving at, suicide.
It's a possibility, of course.
And of course your company isn't liable, I suppose, if it's suicide.
Well, it'd still be liable, but only to the extent of $25,000 under the particular terms of the policy, not $75,000.
I see. Is that all, Mr. Dollar?
I don't think you do see. Look, I'm not claiming it was suicide. I have no reason to think it was. But these questions are going to be raised by the claims board when they meet to consider settlement. And they're not going to pay out any money until they have the answers. So that's why I'm here, Mrs. Markey, to get those answers ahead of time. Now, you can help or you can hinder. But I think you ought to realize that you'll be mainly hindering yourself.
It was not suicide. Bill wasn't that kind. You didn't know him. I resent your implication, Mr. Dollar. He'd never do a thing like that.
I said I have no reason to believe that he did.
Please forgive me. I guess I'm sort of living in a state of shock. I'm not like this, really. Suspicious, belligerent.
Well, sure, I understand, and I'm sorry to have to bother you this way, but there are certain questions...
I know. These things have to be done. It's all right. Would you like a drink, Mr. Dollar?
Not unless you're having one.
Yes, I think I would like something.
In that case, I'll have a scotch on the rocks, please. Oh, here, let me fix them.
Thank you. Make mine the same. I guess it was the mention of suicide that set me off. Bill and I were married for 3 years. We were completely happy every minute of it. Nobody in the world had less reason than Bill to do a thing like that.
What about financial problems?
None that I knew about.
Did you work before your marriage, Mrs. Markey?
I was an entertainer.
Chorus?
Yes. I suppose that gives you the usual impression.
Well, do I seem like a visiting fireman?
No, but...
I just thought you might have been a dancer because you carry yourself so well. Lithe and graceful.
Well, I've been away from it for quite some time.
It doesn't show. Here's your drink.
Thank you. Maybe it'll help me relax a little.
I think it might. Tell me, Mrs. Markey, how did your husband and young Haynes get along?
Well, that should be obvious. We brought him down here with us. Had him living here in the house for a month.
But I understood that was primarily your idea.
Who said that?
Did you suggest bringing Haynes along, or was it your husband?
Well, I might have. I don't remember how it came up now, but Bill was all for it. Otherwise, he'd have put his foot down.
Any possibility that he resented Haynes' presence but kept it to himself?
Of course not. Why should he?
I don't know.
Well, if you're trying to imply something...
I'm not. I'm just asking. I understood your husband had spells of brooding during the last few weeks, and I was trying to find out the reason for it.
If he did, I'm sure I didn't notice it.
What are Danny Haynes' feelings towards you?
I think you're pretty insulting.
I wasn't intending to be.
Well, what would you call it?
Just another routine question. I wasn't meaning to imply that you encouraged him in any way.
I certainly didn't.
But he's young, impetuous. You're very attractive. Maybe he cooked up crazy notions without any encouragement.
He thought of me as a friend, that's all.
No attitudes on his part that your husband might have misinterpreted.
I don't believe I care to answer any more questions like these, Mr. Dollar.
Look, I'm not just asking them for my own pleasure, Mrs. Markey. I'd rather not ask them, but I've got a job to do.
Well, I fail to see why it's necessary to probe into our private lives.
All right, I'll tell you why. Your husband supposedly died out there beyond the surf when a cruiser burned and sank.
What do you mean, supposedly?
His body hasn't been recovered, so at present the evidence of his death is purely circumstantial. In fact, there isn't much evidence one way or another.
But who could possibly doubt him?
The insurance company will doubt it, Mrs. Markey. And they'll hold up processing any claim for payment until one of two things happens. Until I turn up sufficient proof of death to convince them... Or until a court declares your husband legally dead.
I didn't realize...
Barney Wilson from the DA's office, for reasons of his own, is going to file for an immediate court decision. I'm pretty sure of that. But as things stand now, my company will fight it. And with no more evidence than Wilson has, they'll be able to fight it successfully.
But all those questions, what was the point? What were you driving at?
Your husband's death had to result from one of three possible causes. One, an accident. Two, suicide. Three, murder.
Murder? But there was no one with him except... Do you mean Danny?
That's one possibility. One out of three.
Oh, no.
I've no reason at the moment to give it any more weight than the other two. But there is one thing certain, Mrs. Markey. In view of the circumstances, not one cent of insurance is going to be paid until one of those causes is proved.
But what can I do? I don't know anything about it.
Maybe you don't. Or maybe there's something you've forgotten, don't think is important. Or something you haven't wanted to talk about. I don't know, of course. But it might be worth thinking about. It was nearly dark when I left the house, and I wouldn't have noticed the man standing under a palm tree by the driveway if he hadn't made a sudden move to get out of sight. Then when I walked toward him, he scurried out of the drive and slipped into a car parked at the street. I could see it was an old model, but I couldn't identify the make. I caught the last three numbers on the license plate before it disappeared around a bend. I couldn't quite figure it. It might have been Haynes, or some ghoulish swindler who was scared off when he saw the widow wasn't alone. The numbers were 642. Mm-hmm. Expense account item 7, $3.75. Taxi back to my hotel. Item 8, $6.25. Dinner and incidentals there. And item 9, $1.40. Taxi again to the waterfront headquarters of the Harbor Police. 30 minutes later, I was in a police launch with Deputy Agent Barney Wilson, several miles down the coast, skimming across the water toward a bright cluster of spotlights where a salvage barge was working into the night to raise the burned hulk of the charter cruiser Fathom 5.
You still got your mind set the same way, Mr. Dollar?
What way was that?
That there hasn't been any death or any murder?
Oh, come now, Mr. Wilson. You're mistaking an honest scientific skepticism for a set of mine.
Well, it's very pretty, Mr. Dollar. What does it mean?
Well, I haven't taken any definite position yet. But I've got to see more evidence before I'll consider proof of death to be established without a question.
That means you'll file a demurrer against a declaration by the courts, huh?
It's not up to me. It's up to the company. But I can tell you right now that if you petition, they'll move to block it. You have no real evidence, Mr. Wilson.
I'm getting it, though, piece by piece. The sea is starting to give up its prey, Mr. Dollar.
What do you mean?
The boys found a shoe late this afternoon, washed up in the surf, just about where you'd expect to find it if it had been carried in by the current.
Identifiable?
From the same New York shop that Markey's other shoes came from. Same size, same style.
Well, it's something, all right, but it's still not conclusive.
Who would he ask that Markey walks up and tells you he's dead?
No, I guess I'd settle for just seeing him that way. Oh, by the way, I wonder if you could have an auto license checked for me. A partial license on a used car, Florida plates. The last three numbers are 642.
Well, that might take a while with no more than that to go on.
Well, I've got an idea the car may have been purchased within the last 3 weeks or so. Maybe that'll narrow it down.
You got an idea it may mean something?
Look, I have no idea at all. I'm just playing the hunches. But it's about time something in this case started meaning something. We edged the launch up the side of the barge, tied up to a stanchion, and climbed on deck. The power winches on the derricks were still grinding away, and the sunken hull of the burned cruiser was nearing the surface. A crew of men waited with salvage pontoons, ready to float the supporting cradle into place as soon as the waterlogged hulk was raised. Wilson and I stood by the rail, watching, not talking, wondering, I suppose, what answers the wreck might supply us with. The taut steel cables inched their way slowly up from the depths. And finally, the boat itself broke the surface of the water. Then the men moved in with the pontoons, and other crew members dropped a suction hose into the water-filled hull and started a pump to empty. Finally, the whole thing was high enough so we could see that the cabin and the deck were badly burned, almost destroyed. But strangely enough, the hull itself seemed to be undamaged. Then Wilson and I both noticed something at the same time, a solid column of water spouting from a round hole near the keel of the boat. And we both realized what it meant.
Look, Dollar. Look there. Somebody opened the seacocks. Somebody left them wide open.
So one thing is certain. It wasn't an accident. She was sunk deliberately.
That's exactly what I've been trying to tell you right from the start.
Huh?
William Markey was murdered.
Now, here's our star to tell you about tomorrow's intriguing episode of this week's story.
Tomorrow, a photograph, a silver cup, a harried widow, and the dead begin to stir with life. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by Les Crutchfield, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Be sure to join us tomorrow night, same time and station, for the next exciting episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. This is Roy Rowan speaking. Thank you.
Welcome back. You know, there's a certain attitude where it comes to radio, where it's kind of thought of as just kind of a nostalgic trip down memory lane without a whole lot of oomph to it or any sort of cultural value. And this episode I found interesting in so many ways, because you begin off with a quote from Shakespeare, and then you have that one line where the district attorney talked about the sea giving up its victims, and I'm like, you know, I think people would not expect radio characters from the 1950s to talk like that. But there really was, I think, a certain elegance, I think particularly in this show. And plus, really, Bob Bailey just does a great job in those moments that call for every range. And in these two, we got to see a really good picture of Johnny Dollar as just the insurance professional. When he was talking to the wife, when he was talking to the friend, I thought that was, just incredible job there. So, I am really, as always, really enjoying these series the second time through with the, five-parters. And now it's time to turn to listener comments and feedback. Cynthia Lynn Taylor writes, "I'm really enjoying these Sherlock Holmes from May. The Sherlock is a bit different from the earlier ones, and I really like that. No more Sherlock being so down-putting of Watson. However, I've always enjoyed the Sherlock's, all the Sherlock Holmes stories that I've heard. Loving the five-part Johnny Dollars. Weighing in on the differences between actors for him, I can't honestly tell a huge difference. The five-parters are awesome in their ability for storytelling, the ability to bring out the emotions, as in the Valentine series. It almost had me in tears. The 30-minute shows are awesome in that it must have taken a really good writer to get the emotion and story into that small time space. As far as listening to them all together, that has never bothered me in the least. And I really like how you put them together, but I seem to have a really good memory and am unique. Thanks, Adam, for putting this all together. I'm enjoying spending my summer catching up on all the podcasts that I've missed the last few months." Well, thanks so much, Cindy, and I appreciate it, and I hope we've gotten good balance. After we went and we switched from Johnny Dollar second to Johnny Dollar first on Fridays, I've not gotten a whole lot of complaints about the arrangement. You know, we've still had file issues happen every now and again, but no complaints about the arrangement, so I'm glad we've got that going well. And then we have a comment from Pastor Lisa Martin in Boston. Pastor Martin writes, "I just found your podcast this past week when I graduated from a BlackBerry to an iPhone 4S on my birthday last week, August 8th. I've really been enjoying it very much, and I'm hooked. I look forward to tuning every day." And she also goes ahead and comments, "I came on this series starting this past Monday, and I was intrigued. I love Johnny Dollar. The ending was a twist, and that's regarding the Cui Bono matter." So thanks so much. Appreciate you listening in, Pastor Martin, and hope you continue to enjoy the series. All right, well, that will actually do it for today. We will be back tomorrow with the last episode of Mr. Moto. Be sure next week, whether you've enjoyed Mr. Moto or not, to tune in Tuesday, as we'll be beginning the John J. Malone series with Murder and Mr. Malone. And join us on Wednesday when the Fathom 5 matter continues. In the meantime, be sure and support our listener support campaign, support.greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives. And become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.